This is Steve Sherlock with another internet radio show or podcast, number 140 in the series for Franklin Matters. This recording is of the Economic Development Subcommittee of the Town Council. The meeting was held in room 205 on Wednesday, February 21st, 2018, beginning at 6 p.m. The subcommittee is chaired by Tom Mercer. Members are Melanie Hamblin, Eamon McCarthy Earls, and Glenn Jones. Town Planning Director Brian Taberner and Town Planner Amy Love also participated, along with Town Administrator Jeff Nutting and Deputy Administrator Jamie Helene. Resident and multi-small business owner Rich Frangillo participated for the sign discussion portion of the meeting. The meeting runs just under an hour and 30 minutes. Note, the draft documents referred to are not yet available online. Based upon the discussion, updated versions of them will be brought back to the subcommittee before eventually going to the town council for further discussion and action. So without further ado, here is the audio recording.
Okay, time being 6 o'clock, the EDC subcommittee
meeting. Maybe you take a minute?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll be recording.
Okay. You have to announce that.
And this meeting may be recorded by others. How's that?
In specific, it will be.
In specific, yeah.
That works.
Okay. Who wants to start?
Melanie, that was the first subject was hers.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so
go
the.
For it.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Chair. So the temporary sign, the reason why this is here is because there have been a lot of people, a lot of businesses through the Shop Franklin group that I've met that are frustrated with the what feels like a ban on temporary signs to be able to advertise. And what we would like to do is try to get some kind of maybe some kind of loosening of the regulations or some kind of study done, or maybe get all the businesses together to put together a proposal on what they'd like to see. Also, the in the meantime, Stacy David from the Cultural Council contacted me and said that she needed to be able to advertise events that we have in the cultural, for the Cultural Council, like Art Week, yep. And that she couldn't do that because it was against the bylaw for the temporary signs. Well, she couldn't get a sign that would match the one she wanted to do. So she proposes that all town councils or commissions be part of the government so that they're exempt from the bylaws. So those are two issues, right? And really, it makes it very difficult for people to be able to advertise.
So issue number two
is the backstory.
There's a long backstory. Yeah, well, I'm sure there's like years of backstory.
And we just did this.
So issue number two within the last any governmental entity is exempt from a temporary sign. And
okay. She's
going full steam ahead with signs. Mom came up with the idea of using the banners on Main Street in West Central. And so she's in a process of working with Brian to buy some of those.
Okay.
So she'll be able to put those signs up. But I mean, beyond that, there, you know, you're not going to see the planning board advertised or the conservation commission. So it's really going to be
right.
her,
right.
or you know, somebody else on occasion. But we
the
also
big events.
We're also putting the sign that was on the triangle next to the fire station. They were out there today, so that sign's going back up. And you'll be able to put a sign on both. You know, that's a community bulletin board, but
right. Certainly
we reserve it for government. You know, if the government wants to advertise something, we do that.
Okay.
So
like the one, like the one down at Walgreens.
Is that in the?
In the triangle.
Is it in the bylaw though? Is it written in there?
Yeah.
Because
okay, so she was. Well, no, she wanted
exactly.
a banner.
What she wanted was
a banner.
A banner, and we're not going to do.
We're
those.
Not doing a banner.
We got rid of those
years ago.
2 years ago, or more than ten years ago.
Yeah, it's been quite some time.
So
since we've used those, they just turned into a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, they looked hokey and
Well, there's the, you'll have them there all year, where the clerk puts up there.
Yeah, well, we'd like to get rid of that too.
Well, the problem is that people need to advertise.
Well,
right?
Well, those are social, so now they advertise on the board that we bought.
Yeah.
The one that was on the triangle got taken down for construction. That's getting re-put up. There's one at Walgreens you can advertise, and there's one in downtown you can advertise. So it's the Little League. It's whatever event. They reserve space with Gus. Gus manages the whole program. Mm-hmm. And I need the third week in April. Okay. So they deliver the sign, and we put it in. And, you know, we got a backlog. So that disappeared for 2 years because of the construction. But it will be back up and running. And
then having the ability to, you know, we did the downtown. We put the poles up that actually accept those flags that are very, very nice look. And you can put different, you can change the flag as many times as you want. So the suggestion that I had to Jeff, that he gave to Stacy, was to buy a sign that she could use
as a replacement flag.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Take it down for 2 weeks.
Take it down
for
2 weeks to 3 weeks, and then put it back up for any cultural event.
So the DPW will do that because it's a town event.
Right.
Easy peasy. Can't get much more advertisement.
So you mean like a flag on the flagpole?
No, the banners say "Welcome to Downtown Franklin."
Right. Chilling in front.
You take that down. You say "Art Week."
Yeah.
Right.
And the like every third or fourth of whatever, there'll be one of those.
Yeah.
And whether you
artweek.org or
whatever, and it'll have the whole schedule.
There was ultimately. Sort of kind of a master plan that went into the downtown construction process in order to keep the aesthetics pleasing.
Yeah.
And that's where the banner idea came from. Not the small banner idea for the posts came from.
Yeah.
But we really kind of did away with hanging, spanning large banners and other visible large signage for the simple fact that they were A, distracting, and B, you know, not aesthetically pleasing for the downtown. This has been since I've been on, Brian and I've been in the former council has been going back and back and forth on signage. How many times have you written the signage law? Probably three, four times now.
Well, we
had a major
rewrote it the whole thing once, but we've had some tweaks to it.
Yeah.
There's still some needed right now.
Which in fact I think that's probably one of the topics we should definitely discuss in an ongoing economic development aspect is talk about how we can tweak those to improve.
Right.
Some people in the past had hoped to get signs as big as like 6 feet by 6 feet, but a little exaggerated.
I think they're pretty restrictive, so we can like maybe.
So I'm not sure what the specifics of the complaint are. I mean, I could go out with Gus today and pick up 100 illegal signs, easy.
Yeah.
People put them everywhere or all the time.
Right.
We're not in the sign police business unless they're blatant.
Right.
You know, so we, but what's the specifics? I mean, so you
well,
say
I think people would like to be able to put a banner up that if they have an anniversary, or they would like to be able to put their whole menu up in their window, because some of the
they can on the inside, but as long as it meets the bylaw, right?
Right, but it's like a small section of the window.
No.
Well, the actually attached to the window, it's a small section that if it's hung 6 inches back from the window. It's inside your building.
Right. It's as big as you want.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but if it's like, if you were like, I had a restaurant and you wanted to put a menu up that was big on the window so people could see
you
it.
Can.
Well, 6 inches back. Like you said, as long as it's inside the building.
If it's inside the building. There's a lot of, I know there's a lot of history here, so I'm trying to figure out what it is and try to see if we can find a way to maybe make it so that everybody feels like they can advertise and they're not.
But I mean, you look at DeVita's Market. Do you think he needs more advertisement?
Yeah.
Well,
some people just can't get under control. I mean, they go crazy. And there's others that take literally and really want to do what's right and what's in the regulations.
Right.
So
right.
You know, I think it's difficult. I mean, you get somebody that like the zoning enforcement officer Gus Brown going out there and saying, "No, you can't do this. No, you can't do that."
Right. So
and
then
it really gets nuts. And if we just start saying, so we eliminated in the sign bylaw the majority of temporary signs.
Right.
because people had them on their sidewalks. People had
on
them
our hanging. Sidewalks.
Yeah, on, that's true.
Liability.
Yeah, I mean they on were the town they were pretty much they were pretty much anywhere.
Right.
That well, I'm going to put it up on the phone pole. I'm going to do anything I want, and so we had to get it all under control. And that's 8-10 years ago when it was rewritten. That's when things were restricted a lot.
Right.
And so yes, a lot of the downtown businesses would like to be able to put a sign on their sidewalk, you know, one of the
sandwich boards
or whatever. And there's a lot of those things. And I don't know. I mean, I don't make the rules. I just try to write them once in a while.
No.
But I think it's up to council to just make decisions. It's, you know, yeah. If you want to. The way it is now, it works for the town staff because it can kind of keep it under control. If you lift limitations on it, it gets out of control.
Yeah, really quickly.
So by way of example, it just took us 4 months to get the insurance binder. So anybody that has a sign over a sidewalk has to give us an insurance binder of you. Just took us 4 months to get those.
Mm-hmm.
People drag their feet, they don't send them in, sign falls down and hits somebody, who are they suing? Town of Franklin. So, you know, then you get sandwich boards, they blow down the street,
people
trip
property.
Over them, it's dark, you know, so you have liability issues, then people, you know, some people are very good, they put it out, they take it in, others, they want this monstrosity, it's so hard. So I think if you have some specifics or if we meet with a downtown business partnership, I mean, if there's specifics, we can at least say yes, no, or maybe, but other than...
Right.
Happy
I think
to
it's
talk.
Just
maybe
like
if we touch base with the downtown partnership.
Yeah.
And the Shop Franklin group, they have those people that have a lot of ideas of what they want to do, and they feel like they're not allowed to...
But they know, but they don't come forward.
Right.
Well, we have one here.
Okay.
Right?
Okay. Well, we can reach out to those.
Just by way of suggestion in regards to them getting their word out, I mean, over the years, for a lot of the various different events that have popped up in town, all in all, the banner idea or even the ones that were there, they're not overly adverse. You know, they don't really do a lot to get that message out. What really gets the message out better is the networking, the social media, and basically touching base with people through...
Right, like for an event, you mean?
Yeah, because it's really... The banners hardly ever get noticed.
Yeah.
Because people are going by so quickly, usually.
So we'll touch bases with the shop folks and the downtown folks, and then maybe see
we
what their feedback is. Well, we'll stay on the agenda and, you know, see what they have to say or suggestions or ideas. And we can look... And then maybe next time we can actually bring a copy of the Stein bylaw. So Brian can go over it, because
I think it's embedded in my brain.
Well, Gus,
right now.
Maybe Gus can come.
Gus and I can run through it. It is, you know, it's several pages of the zoning bylaw.
I know.
It's not. It's, you know, we'd be happy to go through it.
It's very confusing, and
it can be.
Because the sign bylaw is by area of town, with downtown having the smallest signs and industrial park having the biggest signs.
Right.
But most of it follows the same format.
Right.
So.
On that list of items that we talked about this committee doing, the sign bylaw. I have at least a couple of requested tweaks to the bylaw. Maybe that's the time.
Okay.
That might be.
Well, we can combine it with this.
Sure. Point, combine.
Yeah.
Right.
Combine
Any
other tweaks, but
sure.
Or at least have a discussion.
Okay.
Another discussion.
Well, we could put them both on the same agenda.
Continue forever.
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
Okay.
For sure.
Just saying.
Comment? Question?
Well, what I heard that was interesting to me is we're not in the sign police business. That's useful to hear. However, if what is good for someone may not be good for another, so if one is policed and someone else is not policed, that is going to maybe create some inequality that's going to be tough to manage. And so for someone like me who's got a number of businesses around, I just want to know what's possible. It seems that if I go and ask permission, I'm denied permission.
Right.
But if I don't ask permission, forgiveness is pretty liberal. So it seems that some of my colleagues have utilized that to their advantage, and that's difficult to navigate for someone who wants to do the right thing, but sees that the competition, you know, maybe is in the gray area.
That's a fair statement, yeah. Because yes. Sometimes it takes fair. 2 or 3 days. Oh, we don't, you know, hey, there's a legal sign out there. And then usually we call and say, you got to take the sign down, and they don't do it. And then so 5 to 6 days goes by, and then we go throw it in the back of the pickup truck, and they're like, where's my sign? And so you're right. I mean, we could have a full-time sign person.
Yeah.
But
we don't want it to be that way, right? We want it to be.
So it's a hard, you're right, it's a hard.
It's a tough call.
Yeah,
it really is.
The thing about it, there's several hundred businesses in town that want to have signage out in your face, and if you know, and that's how, that's why you need to put the brakes on to a point. And a lot of times a sign, illegal signs, are scoffed up by the building commissioner or whoever when they're actually there to inspect something, or their next door neighbor, you know, whatever the case may be. They're in the neighborhood and they say, oh, these guys got on 4 street blocks, they've got their temporary signs stuck out there. So you know, those are the things that happen when if you have one sign in your window that's not supposed to be there, in most cases, people are not going to be doing anything. You know, they don't really care.
Well, I'll just give you an example of my experience. Aubuchon moved down here. They put it in a propane tank to fill propane. Mm-hmm. So most people don't even know that we fill propane. So we contacted Eastern Propane for a sign. And they gave us this flag to put up. And so of course it was like a year ago or a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago now, and I didn't know that we couldn't have flags, right? And so within 10 minutes, Gus was there and told me to take it down.
Somebody complained, probably you.
And it was just one little flag that was in my parking lot that just said propane on it.
Right.
And that I would never leave out at night, right? And it was brand new, it wasn't ripped, it wasn't faded. It was to say, hi, we're here.
So someone called and dropped a dime.
Right? Yeah. But so I'm like, well, that to me is like, that's a little restrict. Like, if I'm not going to leave it out overnight,
first of all,
if
you get a sign,
bad.
You got to come to the design review.
Well, I've already done that.
No, I'm just saying that. Right?
It's already,
and they would have said, you
been,
can't have a flag.
Right. My sign guy came for me. So I was like, you go do it.
Part of the problem is not everybody goes through the
rules.
The proper channels and goes through design review. But we are seeing, or at least I have seen, the sign company, the local sign companies understand the bylaw.
That's correct.
And are helping to
educate,
right.
They
educate
are.
The
help people
businesses.
Right.
Okay. To add just a quick backstory to this, there have been in the past, for all intents and purposes, like real estate companies that want to put in signs that are, for all intents and purposes, A, very unaesthetically pleasing and overwhelming to the point where it would just litter the town with in my opinion, garbage. You know, and it just had, everything just had to be squelched to the point where these are our rules, everybody has to follow these rules, we're not going to police it to death. But if there is a complaint, then either someone's going to show up at your door, if Gus happens to be there, he's going to take care of it. And we've vetted the signage law back and forth for years, and this is what it's come down to.
We'll continue. we'll keep it.
Well, it's hard to do business, you know. Right. I mean, we're trying to like
absolutely.
Sure. We're trying to like make.
And the thing is that's what we've always tried to take into consideration when it came to the sign law was to, you know, what's restrictive, but what's too restrictive,
right?
You know, but what also, where do you draw that line where all of a sudden it snowballs? Now you do need a sign police because everyone's decided to put up something that makes the town drawn to looks like patchwork around the town.
No, I understand.
You know,
I
there are some communities, in fact, if you go up to I think it's Medfield, not Medfield, but up by Dover and that Sherbourne area, there are sign restriction laws up there to the point where you can have your symbol, like the Dunkin' Donuts symbol, but it has to be the shade of color that matches all the rest of the signs.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually get the corporations to bend a little bit because they know they're going to make a good buck to go there. And their signage laws are extremely restrictive.
Well, so, we got enough trouble with ours, so.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're just trying to help the little businesses in town, so that because then we can
point.
get
we'll
an income
put it
from
in
them.
The next we'll put it in the future agenda. Okay.
So. Thank you.
Okay.
So parking was Glenn's.
Parking.
We did talk to Jamie and I met with the police and the deputy chief as far as they're concerned, there's little or no option. People are parking legally on these streets. If they're not parked legally, they give them a ticket. But I don't know what you were thinking, because
it's more or less a policing issue for Dean, because most of the issues are related to the Dean students who decided they don't really feel like going all the way from Jones parking lot,
right,
or the local parking lot, all the way down to West Street and that area over there by the dorms that are over there, and they're occupying street spaces that the residents could necessarily occupy,
right, mm-hmm,
for themselves, for their own vehicles. Granted, I think what's happening, kind of like in my own situation, where they now have children who have driving age, mm, children, cars multiply, so you know, they're no longer just satisfied with the two-car driveway that they have. They have to park out the street. So there's not enough parking spaces that the students take, yep, it up. Basically what it is, it's, right, a student parking issue.
Right.
And Dean isn't really addressing the issue, and the students are ignoring it. So, and granted, it's of course only between September and early December and late January through May.
Yeah.
But the fact is that they're occupying winter spaces that most of these residents, and I've just got a few complaints about it. It's not, yeah, the first time. They do it in front of my house from time to time. What I do to divert them away is I actually print out a copy of Dean's parking regulations and I stick it under their wiper and pretend it's a ticket. It usually scares them away, or call Dean directly. But you know, I've been told there have been several complaints from the residents to Dean with little to no results.
Well, they don't have any authority in a public way. Dean doesn't.
No, they don't, but they do have the authority to address their students in regards to proper parking policy. And that's the thing.
I know Paul is working on it.
You know? And no, I don't know if their change from the policing force that they had before to the policing force that they have now, if the policing force even really gets involved in that. And we usually used to see Dean security make regular runs through that area and then down by my house,
right,
for those purposes. But now, since they've switched over to this private security company, I don't think they go past their lines. They don't even cross the street.
Yeah, and part of the problem is that they're not parking illegally. So
true, but they're not.
And I understand they, you know, they're abusing the privilege, so to speak.
Yeah.
But I know Paula sends out. It's part of their package that all the commuters, yeah, as well as,
yeah,
the residents get at the beginning of the year. I don't know if we could ask her to send the second one out at semester break around the holidays.
Yeah, I can talk to her.
As another reminder to them,
mm,
that
I think the
there are specific parking lots set for them.
I think the students are doing what every student would do.
The shortest point between
there in the classroom.
We will be striping portions of West and East and Nason Street, so there's specific designated parking so people don't block driveways, don't block rubbish access, don't block parking too close to corners, so that even if there are kids there, it won't interfere with the day-to-day operations of the neighborhood.
Mm.
And of course, everybody thinks the street in front of their house is theirs.
That's fine, yeah.
Right. You know, that's just natural.
Well, I've only towed a few cars, but that was my mother-in-law,
right,
so she didn't get too mad at me.
So we'll keep working on it. We can talk to Paula.
It's just something, because it's really Paula's issue. But
she doesn't like it either, I can tell you.
I'm sure she doesn't, but you know, I don't really want to get under her bad side. So,
okay.
But this brings up an interesting topic for the future about what do we propose in the future if we plan on continuing the economic development of the downtown to avert having student and or non-residents parking downtown, because it's going to become a systemic issue as we progress with the economic development of the downtown, just parking in general.
What's a non-resident?
Well, somebody who's come in, decided to, you know, visit somebody for a week or whatever. And my point is, do you think that we might have to get into having stickers for downtown parking?
No.
And having that kind of stuff?
No. That's a huge expense.
Money over there.
Software, people move in, they move out, you rent a room for 2 weeks, I'm a resident, and then I leave.
Yeah, but how is
staff
that money loser?
The police got to manage it. you know, they got to give them out, they got to do them.
I know, Boston just went up to $100 a stick.
Yeah, that's the city of Boston. They're charging $4 an hour to on the meter. Right? We couldn't
pay for the
couldn't get 16 cents. So,
I'm trying to get people to get downtown.
True.
I'm mostly concerned about the residential.
On that one, I just wanted to mention, in Worcester, they have, in certain neighborhoods, they actually have placards or something. You put them on your dashboard.
Yep, give them to somebody.
People go by and has the year and date on it, whatever. Police go by and say, okay, that's great. But I happen to know that people have those made up for themselves. And each family has 5 or 6 of them.
Yeah.
And anybody can fax.
So anybody, including myself in the past, my son-in-law gave me one. Pull up in front of the guy's house. Oh, all right.
If we're not going to be able to come up with a waste to abuse it. Right, I understand that. But I mean, if we're not going to be able to come up with some kind of policing measure, then we definitely need to put some pressure on Dean to at least address their students. So if we could definitely do that.
Okay. Well, we'll talk.
Or if I have to do it myself, I'll do it too.
Yeah.
Okay. Now let's go through the channels.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Next.
Okay.
Any other comments or questions on the parking surrounding downtown? All right, commercial one parking regulations.
I'd like to take that one.
Yes.
In your packets. Speaking of,
we're gonna have a school street restriction.
So one of the things that the planning department recommended almost 10 years ago was to change the commercial one regulations on parking and
zoning.
So those are the next two issues coming up here.
He's gonna pull up the map, just a layer. And it will show the zoning.
Zoning layer?
Yeah. You can pull it on the zoning. Oh.
So the...
Click. Yeah. Now you got to click the other one. So, yeah.
There you go. Yeah, come in.
Just take a second. Yeah.
So towards the middle, there's light green that'll be popping up here.
Yep.
There you go. Light green downtown.
There's one there, and there's also one around.
Light cottage.
There you go.
Right.
Yeah, so it's not a very big area. Mm-hmm. It used to include the downtown commercial zone, which was purple in the middle. Okay.
And that's separate.
But that was totally separated out, and now we have, so it's two different zones. C1 was a center type of commercial district. Now it's more, and I call it uptown if you want. I don't care what you call it, but it's not in the core downtown. So when it was in the downtown, they wanted to increase development down there, incentivize development, so they did not have any parking restrictions at all on a development coming in. The rest of the town had your standard, if you look at on this thing that I turned up out here, under B parking schedule, residential buildings, non-residential buildings, mixed
page.
Use in the downtown.
First page.
Yeah, right on the first page there. That's from the current bylaw, just taking things out of it. All the different uses have different schedules, so essentially 250 square feet for a parking space, whatever the case may be, okay?
Mm-hmm.
C1 didn't have any at all. And then we created the downtown commercial zone,
mm-hmm.
and we added in a parking requirement for mixed-use development
for the
downtown commercial.
Right.
So that's number 3 that was put in there, and it only applies to parking spaces for residential units. There is no commercial requirements. Okay.
Right.
So that obviously can increase some problems in the downtown if somebody comes in and you know, they say, oh, we'll get along with 5 spaces when they really need 20, you end up with major problems with mm-hmm. the parking in the downtown. So I'm suggesting that we do a couple of things, okay? And I just want to point out before we go to the second page is that up in A, I underlined this area, okay? So this parking section in the bylaw applies to all zones except C1 and DC districts, which are exempt from the section with the exception of the mixed-use development in the DC.
Okay.
So even if somebody puts in parking lot, it doesn't have to meet our guidelines. in any way. It doesn't have to meet the rest of it if it's in the C1 or DC zones. So which kind of creates problems also, because if you tell, you know, somebody has 10 spaces where, you know, squeezing them in where you really should only have 8 or something, we can't really regulate it very well because it's exempt from that in the zoning districts.
Except right? If they have mixed use.
Except they have mixed use.
And that's only for the residential portion.
Residential, correct.
So if you're building 2 stores downstairs and 5 apartments upstairs, you need parking for the apartments but not for the stores.
Right. Yeah, you need 1.5 per unit, so that would be 7.5.
So 8, yeah.
Yeah. So 8.
But no place really for the employees to park. Never mind the customers.
Right.
We really need 40 or 50 parking spaces to really do a good job there, but you're only required to have 8. So.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so what I did is I wrote a proposed zoning bylaw amendment. It was just a matter of moving things around. So what I'd like to do is strike out that sentence that we just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole bylaw, zoning bylaw, relates to all districts, okay? And you know, so in other words, if you have a dimension on a parking space, and later in the actual parking section is like more like 5-6 pages, but I'm just dealing with the first couple and kind of changing. It takes care of everything, really.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so if we cut that out, this bylaw now relates to the whole town.
To everything.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So down below in the first, second page, it says B, parking schedule. What I did was I cut out the whole section B, mm-hmm, and rewrote. Okay, that way
it's on the next page.
It's clean, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so where it says, right below, it says number 1 in the downtown commercial zoning district, halfway down roughly?
Yeah.
Okay, that's where that section will start. So what I'm proposing is that we put, as it is today, 1.5 parking spaces per residential unit in a mixed development,
mm-hmm,
mixed-use development.
So that didn't change.
No change.
So this is the red.
Right? And then to add in 1 space per 500 square feet of gross floor area for non-residential uses. That's actually
pretty modest.
It's
too.
Very modest, actually. Mm-hmm. A bank would be about 250, a retail space maybe 200. But we want to make sure it's tight downtown. But mm-hmm, we don't want to stop people from really developing, but we do want to at least get some parking requirement in there. So that's the reason for that number. It does not have to be that way. We can debate that. But the reality is, I think it's a good middle ground. There are some communities in the area that have, most of them have, like we almost have here, townwide 1.5 spaces or 2 spaces per housing unit or whatever, and it's all standardized throughout the whole town. We do it just a little bit different because of the C1 and the DC districts. Okay.
Quick question.
Okay.
In regards to this, you note 500 square feet of gross floor space. Now, is that gross usable?
No.
The floor space?
It's gross. It's gross.
So it's a closet.
It's
a bathroom.
It's everything.
Yeah.
Really. So if you have a 3,000 square
of just
foot imprint
of the
building, you get 6.
Okay.
Okay. So,
yeah. All right. So just. So you got to remember that the reason we can have 1.5 is, for the most part, except for the Cottage Street, everything's with walking distance of the train. So you can have less parking on the residential because, mm-hmm, you're thinking
maybe they'll
they have to live
the
downtown, yeah. People commute, so you know normally you'd need more, but I think the 1.5 is plenty.
So what I'm recommending, where it says 2 in the commercial 1 zoning district, I'm recommending 1.5 for residential units. And note that residential unit is not a mixed use because you don't have to have it in the second floor. It can be a first floor. It could be an apartment complex. It could be a, you know, whatever the case may be. So commercial 1 allows first floor. So you don't have to have like you do in a downtown. And the same thing on the non-residential uses. What we have is a 500 square foot area. So these are actually easy. If you're a new developer coming in, this is really easy to tolerate, okay? So it's not going to hit people really hard or anything like that. I did go and I looked at, you know, I kind of studied all the different parcels in the C1 area, and yeah, I mean, a lot of these are really small lots. If they redevelop it, it's very difficult to do anything with.
Without putting something together.
Yeah. So But as of today, if they have a parking lot that's only three and this calls for five, they're okay until they go to new development comes in or whatever, then they have to fix things, right?
The grandfather.
In addition, planning board can waive a certain number of parking spaces when they do a site plan. So if we require 50 of them, you only have 40, they can waive the other 10. If, you know, so you just have to prove that you don't need those additional 10 spaces. All right, so, and number three is all the other districts. I just made a couple of clerical, grammatical changes, but everything is really the same mm-hmm. there. I did delete one sentence, which I wanted to mention, let's see here.
Last one?
It's above right. number one.
Yeah, it's above number one. Yeah, so, yeah, so, yeah, on the page number three, seven. It's actually number four.
Right
yeah,
above the red.
Page.
Yeah. Right here.
Yeah, so, town attorney recommended we get rid of it. There's no need for it. It's covered in other sections, and it's, he doesn't think it'll stand up anyway, okay? So, there was no reason for that sentence in his opinion. So, we're deleting it out of the thing. So, the only thing that's really, I mean, you can change this around, you can do anything you want, you debate it, whatever, but mm-hmm. Essentially it's ready for council if you liked it, so you can just decide what you want to do with it.
The only question that I would have, and it's not that I feel strongly one way or the other as far as the amount goes, but if Rockland was to sell their property
right.
and a complex go in there,
right.
this really, they're pretty much the only one that's going to get affected by this. Mm-hmm. when you yeah. think about it, when yeah. you look at what's downtown,
mm-hmm. right.
That piece of property is probably
the biggest by
the
biggest
launch,
by far.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Rick's Cafe,
Tibonacre. Right.
Downtown. But you're right. There's only two or three. Keep going.
Yeah.
Keep going. So, yeah. So Rockland's 28, correct?
What?
Yeah. Well, yeah. 28, 34, 20. They own like all these.
They have multiple.
Yeah. They're not.
There are four of them.
Yeah. So 15,
the 35, 34, 20, 28, yeah, and the one 19. Next to it is
but we're adding in that 5. No,
not 19.
Not 19. That's the chaining place.
I don't think I don't see that it's an issue. I'm just saying.
Well, again, it can be waived.
True.
Right.
I mean, one of the things I was going to ask, you know, you look next door here, and there's way, way, way more parking than we'll ever use at Bob's. Right. Now, is that still the parking requirement?
All the parking. See, what I did was ask Amy to ask Beta to check out several different towns in the area that they deal with on their parking requirements, right. So we compare. And they're right in line.
They're all the same. Have. Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So.
So you just ask for a waiver.
Yeah. Okay. If you think you don't need it, you ask.
Okay. Well, I'd rather have it than not have it.
We like the waivers because we want more impervious. And, you know, for the three times a year when the place is full, right. I'd rather have, I bet you there's 100 spaces a day that never get used.
Mm-hmm.
You know, out this way. Ever get used. Well, of course. But that was built
that
40,
whole side
40,
of building.
Yeah, 40 years ago. Right. You know, so absolutely. You today you'd say, I don't need all that parking.
Right. It was a time when they overbuilt parking and every day. It was what they did. And
Okay.
Hopefully we scale things back.
I mean, you guys do a good job when people come in, they say, I need 10 spaces off. And we go, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, you just negotiate. The planning board is usually pretty good, and in some cases they may say, "Well, what happens if you need them parking spaces?" And we find that you're wrecked. They say, "Well, you can put in a phase two parking, you know, type of thing, which if the planning board requires it, you can actually go build that extra third of an acre or whatever it is for parking, or whatever. But if you don't, then you never build it, and it's always green space." Okay.
Wait a minute. Questions. Mm-hmm. Further questions on the proposal.
Can I just, do you have a question?
Nope, I was just going to make a motion.
Okay. I just wanted to ask
a question, because I've never seen this before, but like the guest house, so the other zoning districts, you have guest house, so one space. So is that one space for you per unit?
One space.
So you have other zoning, like, and they have residential buildings, there's guest houses, lodging houses, and other group accommodations. There's one
three
space.
Number two.
One space, is that one space per unit? Is that one space, just they just need
one
space?
One space per a 40 unit room, no.
It's per unit.
Per unit, right?
Should say
okay,
per,
all right. I was just
per
like,
unit.
Show up, that's
okay.
A typo, per unit? Would
per unit.
That what
it's
you'd
not,
say?
No, it says it.
It says per unit.
Where?
Guest unit.
Dwelling units.
Guest?
Dwelling
no,
units.
No, well,
no,
that's
yeah,
three.
That's three.
This
right.
is two.
Two.
We're looking at two. Because I was like, oh, guest
house
is in town.
I can
awesome.
Add in the words.
And then I was like,
I can
one
add
space
in
per unit.
Per unit.
Yeah,
fine.
Yeah, that's
well,
fine.
You don't have to. I just asked. And it's one.
No, actually,
no,
it's
fine.
Fine.
Okay.
Because you know,
I was like, well, one space? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's all. Thank
good.
You.
Amen.
No comments.
Okay, Glenn. Oh, Jeff.
My thought is you should not. You should sit on this for a meeting. I think people need time to absorb information.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know it's nice to support stuff, but,
yeah.
You know, sometimes you come back with different questions you didn't think of, and
yeah,
it's not
fine.
Like it's like it has to get solved tomorrow. And so I think if you take this home and say, well, what about this or what about that, and you come back in a month or whatever, we meet again and say, no, okay, I'm good, or what about this? So I don't think there's anything on any of this agenda that has to be solved tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And a little time sometimes give you a reflection. So that was just my thought.
Fine with me.
Mm-hmm.
Rest
okay.
of the committee?
That's all right.
Okay.
I like to do just some research.
Right, no, and you can add, you can talk to people.
I'll just make a motion and put it on our next agenda for...
Okay.
Well, we can just...
The chair,
with
a chair.
With yeah. revisions... that he's going to put, and then we can always move it next
yep.
week.
Well, I think
excellent.
We just put
and if
on.
You come up with any other ideas between now and then, too, we can squeak them in there.
Okay.
Okay. Next. Commercial one-dimensional regulations.
I love this one.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so just going to print this one off. Thank you for printing this one off.
Like I said about the parking, the same thing happened with the dimensional regulations. When we created the downtown commercial, we did not change the C1 zoning.
Okay.
And, I believe it's necessary. And they're not huge changes, but we do need to consider it. Again, I went through all of the C1 zone parcels in the zone because I was concerned that if we change the square feet, the area of the lot, or the frontage, I wanted to make sure if there was any changes there at all, it would not impact, you know. And as it is, there's a lot of parcels already that are non-conforming. They don't have 50 feet frontage or 5,000 square feet. So. We're going to leave those alone because any increasing is more, which is more and more non-conforming lots, and there's really no reason
mm-hmm.
for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, minimum yard dimensions. Now, those of you
mm-hmm.
who are familiar, you have a front setback, side setbacks, and a rear
mm-hmm.
setback. Okay, so you're not supposed to build up to the property lines.
Mm-hmm.
In most cases, in C1. We actually were allowing the side setback to be zero, and also in the downtown commercial. And the
mm-hmm.
reason for that is many times in a say a city block, you have two buildings right next to each other, right on the property line. We have a new downtown commercial zone, so most of that is no longer applicable for C1.
Mm-hmm.
So I did take a look at it, and there are three or four parcels where a building is right on the property line. But in most cases, they're well set back 5, 10, 15, 20 feet, whatever the case may be. So what I would like to do is to put in a side setback requirement of 10 feet. If you're pre-existing non-conforming, it's not an issue as of right now. We don't have it's not like we can We're not going to force anybody to rip a building over and down and build it smaller or move it over. It's fine. So the building footprint where it is today will always be there. If you have a tear down, you can build within the same footprint. So that's really not an issue at all. But for new development, I don't think we want somebody building, you know, right on the property line at 3 feet if there's no need for it. I mean, it should not be allowed.
So why is it still zero on the downtown?
The downtown commercial we're leaving is zero because that's what it was when it was C1 there, it was zero. Mm-hmm. I'm just leaving that one alone. We can change that also if you want. But we do have several buildings in the downtown built to the property lines.
Yeah.
And oh, okay.
That,
yeah.
You know, it's okay. More,
almost
it's
everything downtown.
Yeah. It's more dense.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it's more dense. But if you get into
if someone asks, we have an answer. That's what yeah. I was.
If you get into the C1 zone, it is. You know, it's still tight. There are a lot of small lots, and there's some that are built at a property line, but most of them are individual buildings, and they should be able to deal with a 10-foot. It's not huge.
I think so. Yeah. So, Mr. Chairman, just by way of example, this room's 12 feet wide. So, that you know, six ceiling tiles, 12 feet wide. Mm-hmm. That's how much they're talking about putting in between the buildings. I mean, not even 12 feet, 10 feet. So that's a reasonable amount. But what's the standard width of an alleyway? Car length? Car width?
Yeah.
No, car width would be 8 feet, so it'd have to be wider than that. Probably 10 to 12.
Yeah. I mean,
bottom line is this
two buildings
are not private way.
Right.
Yeah.
No.
Right.
All right. So,
any other questions at the moment? Okay, keep going.
All right. So, as far as maximum height of building, all right. Mm-hmm. Right now, they can build by right 3 stories of 40 feet, and they can get a special permit, possibly by planning board, of mm-hmm. up to 5 stories and 60 feet. Mm-hmm. Now, the C1 area is no longer in the downtown core, and I'm recommending it gets cut back to four stories by special permit or 50 feet, whatever is, you know, it's higher, which is exactly what is the we have in the downtown commercial district.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we make it the same size structure, we're scaling it back just a bit. That way the only larger, taller structures that we allow would be out in the industrial zone.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And what's the current heights for the industrial zone?
60, isn't it?
You're at...
Like here.
Industrial would be...
Six.
Well, it actually... The
six
story. Yeah, it can go up to 5 stories. Now, the feet part there, it doesn't have... We don't have it in there because a lot of times industrial buildings have all kinds of weird things up on the top.
Right.
And
so, right.
But right now, it can be three, and it can go up to 5 by special permit. Which is what we have in C1, and I think that's for our downtown, for our C1, I think it's kind of high. I mean, some downtowns is perfectly fine. The other one is maximum impervious coverage.
Can go 6 feet. Office, you can go 60 feet.
Say that again, I'm sorry.
Office, you can go 60 feet. Because it says on the office.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, same thing.
So the office zone would be...
A couple buildings next to the Pond Street property. Office was just that one area.
Just the dent.
That was
by New Style.
No, we're talking about the
pond.
Your condominium Pond Street property.
Yeah. Right next to
that we sold recently.
Oh yeah.
That parcel plus the two buildings next south.
Oh yeah.
That's the only
Chestnut Dental. It's already built.
Right.
So it's moved.
Yeah.
There's no other. There's no other office zone.
No,
we created that.
They're built out. We created it.
So right. Yeah.
So how about the limited industrial?
It's not on the map anymore.
Okay. Glenn?
No, I was just going to say, so even if the school next door, does that still fall under the same zone as the office building, the plate of the children's school?
Kindercare,
does that
that's the same zone. Yeah.
So
yeah.
So they could, for all intents and purposes,
rip down the building
and put up equivalent to the building next to it.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But not high.
Theoretically.
But not high.
No, it could be high because that's
only
4 stories.
They can go 3 story and by special permit they can go 5.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
But again, special permit.
I doubt there's enough parking.
Well,
lot.
Yeah, they have
parking
lots really
full
no
now. There's no parking.
No parking.
Back there.
So maximum pervious coverage of the existing lot. Now, right now, between the building and the paving, you can cover 100% of your lot if you're in the C1 district. So not one, you know, piece of green in the whole, essentially. So we know that these lots are tight, they're small, but putting a requirement that at least 10% should be appropriate. I think it's it makes a lot of sense. So I'm suggesting that we go.
It's two shrubs.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, really? I mean, you require all kinds of things to look at when you're doing a site plan and everything. And then you can't put a parking space within 10 feet of the roadway right up off the bat. So that's part of our regs. So right up there, you have 5% at least of the lot.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that unreasonable to ask for that. All right. So those are the. That's what recommended right now, as far as that's concerned.
Questions? Further questions?
No.
Okay.
No.
Thank you.
So just a quick question, Tom. If you don't mind.
What happened to further questions?
No. This is this is not in regards to the topic at hand.
I busted you.
He loves to bust me. Tom and I. Yeah.
Go ahead, Glenn.
It's all right. I live for it.
Yeah, I know.
In regards to impervious surface, have you guys had an opportunity to learn a little bit about what the EPA is kind of throwing on us? Is the EPA impervious
surface? Yeah, stormwater.
Yeah. Phosphorus loads. Mm-hmm. So you guys are familiar with the whole, 2 acres are more impervious surfaces and phosphorus. All right, so you've heard about that. So, because we're looking to get slammed. Are they still pushing for that? To go through court?
Oh, God. Through court since last July.
No, it's okay to stay there. Is there any likelihood that that's going to come out of court?
We're going to either come first or second. Those are two options.
How about we just move the river out of our district?
Well, still in the watershed.
Let's move on to number 5, multifamily housing and general residential 5 and commercial 1.
Okay. Happy to take that. I had a.
I'm happy to give
a handout. We have a handout. I'm not going to. I don't think it's not in your best interest to talk about every word of this 2-page handout tonight.
Correct.
But I just want to, because it is, if you really study it, actually it's time to take time to absorb it in no time. But what I'd like to talk about is that C1 and General Residential 5 have, they allow a multifamily development, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And they don't have to have any mixed use or anything. They have to, okay? And they allow one dwelling unit per 1,000 square feet lot area. Mm. So if you have an acre lot, you can put 43 or 44 housing units on that 1 acre, okay? It requires a special permit, but that's exactly what's been happening in the couple of rezones we've had recently. Up on Dean, we have 200 and some odd units going in there. We also have on West Central Street before the planning board, we have another 30 or so there. Mm-hmm. So it's very dense. And I think we don't want, at least I don't want to see this town with another 1,000 housing units in the next couple of years because we don't do something about this. I would like to see that the number changed to something like one dwelling per 3,000 square foot of lot area and couple it with an affordable housing unit. And we're going to talk about on your list is affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we need to change this number from 1,000 to something else, either 2,000, 3,000, or whatever. And we can be discussing, all kinds of different options. But I think we need to change it in the near future.
Totally agree.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So I would like to combine it with an affordable housing component. It's an inclusionary zoning, but it would be an incentive-based. So you can build by special permit, one per 3,000 square feet. If you give us 15% affordable units, you can go you know, one per 2,000 or something like that. So that's, so on the second page.
Is that for both zones?
Say again?
Is that for both zones?
That would be for both zones. Okay. Proposing, correct, yeah. So on the second page, which I'm just going to show it to you, but you don't have to think about it too much right now because there's a lot of numbers here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
All right, so it is over on the left side and up above, it says may be allowed currently by special permit, mm-hmm. lot square mm-hmm. feet per unit, 1,000 units per acre, 43.56, which rounds up or down, so it would be 44 per acre. Mm-hmm. So these are different alternatives, options, and things that you take your time and look at. Mm-hmm. I'm proposing the top line, change it to the proposed market rate, only development, if they're not going to include an affordable, they'd be 3,000 square feet per lot. Per unit. And if you're proposing affordable units, 15% or more, you have 2,000 square feet of lot per unit. So it's, you know, you're getting that incentive. If you were to do it and you had 1 acre, you would get 7 additional units. 3 of them had to be affordable.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just a quick question. The 15%.
Debatable,
right.
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just curious, just curious where that one came from.
I think the issue is, you know, 10's the minimum to stay, but there's a lot of other housing that's going to be built. So if you can get 15, like, our over 55 is 15%.
Right.
And the way was, well, we'll make up a little here because we're losing it there. I don't know if that was his thought, but that's how we...
It needs to be more than 10, without doubt, to maintain your...
Maintain the pace keeping up with over 10% so we don't get into the 40Bs again. So
yeah, we wouldn't be doing our due diligence if we weren't talking affordable units with anything.
Mm-hmm.
And with everything, I should say.
How's that different than the second paragraph about 5,000 square feet? Up to one dwelling per 5,000 square feet. Where is that? Number 3 on the first page. Right here.
Is that just an option, Brian?
Another option.
Is that just like a...
Another option?
Another option.
Because a lot of these are scenarios, right? Like on the second page, all these were mostly examples.
We have a solid line here.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what we just talked about a minute ago. And this is the affordable component. And
so those are just two options.
There's different options.
You can put it, they can come up with their own.
Right. There's also other options. For instance, the planning board, the town can allow up to a certain size by right in certain area. For instance, 8 units per acre, allowing it by right.
Right.
And then if you want something else, you have to give the affordables and then, you know, things. Okay. So. There are a lot of different ways. The state would love us to do something by right, and 8 per acre is something that they've mentioned multiple times. But really, it's really what's right for the town, and I think that's what you have to mm-hmm. look at right now. So. All right. So, I really want to make sure we change that number from 1,000 to whatever, and then maybe when we talk about the affordable, we'll continue at that time. Put something together for everything. Mm-hmm. Package together. Or
that makes sense. Right. Questions or comments? Okay.
I like it.
Moving right along. Number 6. Review of our infamous R7.
God, we're going to do a backstory now?
No. So I just put this on because, as you know, we've had one very successful R7, and then we had a proposed R7 that kind of came out of, came to the council unexpectedly because it wasn't on the map. And so, you know, there's a couple thoughts. Do people want R7 or they don't? Do they want to put it on the map or they don't? People hate surprises. Doesn't matter what it is, you know. If you expect your neighbor can build one house and now they want two, it's an outrage. So I thought it was worthy of discussion to say, what do we want to do or what does the council want to do going forward with, the whole concept of, how many units per acre is that? It was 4, right? 4 units per acre.
I think it was 4.
So it was proposed in residential one, which is one per acre, and then you can go four times the density, basically, right?
Yeah, I think that's right.
And you know, and I think you know whether you were for or against it, it created a lot of firestorm because of it was a surprise.
Yeah.
So you know,
the issue is if. You talk about the country club piece.
Right.
And that piece of property was surrounded by the country club, so.
Mm-hmm. And 140, and no neighbor.
140, and right. There were no neighbors. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Unique.
But the other piece that came up had many neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't see any place we'd look to put R7
mm-hmm.
that is similar to Summer Street is going to be the exact same thing. And they're just, but I don't know if it's something we should hold or not for that country club type piece. I don't know. I know, Glenn.
I hate rest of them.
I know you do.
It's got not that Cook's Farm didn't turn out nice, and not that it's not conducive to the area in which it sits. It's the problem is it's got two words in it that just make my skin crawl, and that's high density. And because the problem is there is a time and a place for it. And what opens up the Pandora box for this is the old saying that Jeff always used to say, what you do for one, you have to do for everybody.
Exactly.
And right. You got to be careful how you yep. strategize all of that, because it came to a, you know, excuse my language, it came to a shit show when it came to the whole Summer Street property, because it was a rural residential one
yep.
neighborhood, which you had distances between houses, you had a fair amount of tree lines between houses. You had a very busy street mm-hmm. that, you know, for all intents and purposes, was still a neighborhood. And not so much because the neighbors were complaining, but it just wasn't the type of zoning that fit that particular area of our town. It fits great right over by the country club. Suits the need of that village-type area.
Which was
perfect.
Rural residential one, too.
Right. Fits right.
So,
fits it.
So, you know,
that fits it for the location. It's super tricky.
Very slippery slope.
Right.
Yep.
But what happened was is now it became how many
55
50,000.
Oh no, what do you want?
How much acreage did they need in order to meet the Rose 7 zone? Was it 5?
You need 1 acre of upland for four units.
So if there's wetlands, it doesn't count.
Right. So
we had plenty of land.
Let's put it this way: a lot of ears perked up in areas throughout the town.
We need a 5 acre minimum.
Right, yeah, 5 acre
right.
minimum.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, need a 5
right.
acre.
Need a 5 acre minimum.
There's no maximum, right?
No,
you can't do this to like 50 acres.
You could.
No, you could. That's
if
the
you
thing.
If he zoned it.
If he zoned
right?
it.
Yes.
So the issue is really.
That's kind of one of the things.
So it exists.
Like,
so zoning is a two-step process. You have the language. And then it has to be upvoted to be on the map.
Right.
Right.
Without it being on the map, it doesn't exist.
Right.
So R7 was created for Cook's Farm,
yep.
and then that's the only place it was on the map. And then a proposal made to add it to the map on Summer Street.
Right.
That failed.
Right.
But, you know, so the question really is, do you want to leave R7 on the books and not on the map? Or do you say, you know, I want to put it on the map, so we'll have a big public hearing, or let's just get rid of it. So you have a couple different options. Do nothing. That's one option. Option two is put it on the map, or option three is get rid of the language. Those are the three options
right.
you have.
And so the areas that
mostly
put it on the map
are
going to
be mostly residential one now, because
okay.
the downtown.
There's no five acre piece
right.
generally
right.
that's unless it's in rural residential. There might be
right.
one here or there, but generally
yep.
speaking. It's in the light yellow areas.
Yeah.
Regardless, it would be if we if we kept it on the books but didn't put it on the map,
it's going to come up someday.
It is going to come up again, and it's going to be a similar type situation.
Yep.
But ultimately, the council does have that decision, whether they want to do it or not. If you wipe it off the books, then
it's pre-existing non-conforming.
Right.
Well, no, it doesn't exist.
No, it doesn't exist.
So you just can't put it on the map.
By way of example, the areas that do exist would be based on the grandfather. These are all condos built in the 80s
that don't, the zoning doesn't exist.
Okay.
I mean, actually, it does. It's R6, but it's so convoluted.
Some of them are R6, some of them aren't.
But it should be taken off the books. But so, and this is R7, and then, but... most of the area that would be available, mostly in the white, this color. It might be
maybe way up north a little bit.
There's one or two over here.
I'm very similar to Glenn. I think the project at Country Club was a great project for that location. We no longer have to look at a net when you enter Franklin.
Or an empty field.
Or an empty field, or whatever the case may be. But I think it's a nice piece of property. I think they've done a nice job with it.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't hurt us school-wise. There's no kids.
Right. The people that live there love it.
And the people that live there, I can tell you that half of the people that live there are members at the Country Club. Mm-hmm. They all moved to Franklin. People from Medfield, from Norfolk, they all sold their places and came over here because it's right next to the
location,
and they can walk. But by the same token, I, for one, certainly don't want to get into another Summer Street situation, because that was a nightmare.
Which there is a fair possibility could. Because there's been interest in lots, not only on Summer Street, but areas around Maple Street.
Mm-hmm.
I think even some around Lincoln Street
that
have had ears poke up thinking, hey, I could do this in my area. Mm-hmm. You do it for one, you do it for two. It's like, where do you draw the line?
How do you say no now that it's already been done?
Oh,
because there's no R7 on the map.
Yes.
It's the same.
You just voted no. But as Jeff said, we also have the option of eliminating that zone, R7, from our books.
Mm-hmm.
And then nobody can come in and apply for it because it's not there.
Right.
Doesn't exist. The one that does exist would just obviously grandfathered in, and it wouldn't be wouldn't be an issue.
Yep.
But this is one I think this committee needs to take some time, think about, talk to people, and think through this process before we move forward with any recommendation to the council. So tonight was a good time for everybody to make sure everybody understood what R7 is, what exists, what doesn't exist, and what our options are.
Yeah, I was just going to sort of echo that, actually. I think it's definitely something we probably need to gather a few more opinions on from folks around town. Because, I've spoken with a lot of the folks on Summer Street. I live right on Summer Street, so I've had a chance to hear a lot of the concerns that people had about that, R7 option there. Couple of years back, and obviously the opposition seems to have been pretty much overwhelming on Summer Street, and I imagine it would probably be the same elsewhere in the town. But there are things that set Summer Street apart from other areas that are R1 kind of zoning. So it's possible that someplace else people might actually embrace that. Unlikely, but I suppose it would be good to just get a better sense of what the outlook is on that.
That's why there's no rush to judgment.
Right. Exactly. Because there's nothing out there, there's nothing on the map, so,
Well, the best part of the situation that we're in now is that we are above our 10% affordable housing.
Yeah.
Because one of the largest threats that came out of the Summer Street project was, well, if you don't do this for us, then we're going to threaten affordable on the whole the whole lot.
Yeah.
So it was this tit-for-tat kind of situation for a while there. And it's put us in a better, stronger position to be able to dictate that. But it doesn't change the fact that where we stand now, we're still at 850 units, give or take.
And we get the 280 and the 257 and the 100 on Pond Street, so that's 280, 380, 485, 80, 600 and something.
Yeah.
And then you got other permits out there.
Current buildable units.
It's pretty about 800.
That are going to have an impact on our budget.
You get
budget
the 10 on Maple.
Dramatically. So when we're reviewing this, we're also thinking about what our future budget, how our future budget's going to be affected by this. Which is why when they say Res 7 high density, or since we're in a position where we can say no to the high density with affordable housing, we at least now put ourselves in a position that if we allow further Res 7 to come along, we're putting literally putting ourselves in a high density situation, which is something we may not want to do in the future because of the situation we're in now. Just my thought. Yeah.
No, but I think high density downtown with affordability is a good mix.
With and commuter rail, if you're talking downtown districts.
That's what C1 and what Brian kind of alluded to earlier, so that's why you can think that over, because then you have transportation and you can walk to the store and you can. So anyway, just a thought.
Okay.
So next.
Everybody understand. R7, nobody has a question about that. I want to try to keep these meetings to 1 hour to 1 hour and 15.
This is the last issue.
And it's hard, when Glenn's here. So.
I am not buying you coffee tomorrow.
I guess I'm buying you. Number seven, review of over 55.
So thank you, Mr. Chairman. So. Gosh, a long time ago, far, far away in another universe, we created an over 55 overlay district to allow for over 55 zoning, and that was in response to allowing development with no kids, basically. That was the concept behind it. And out of the gate, we had several proposed. And originally, we had a 5% affordable component, which ultimately we were able to get up to 15%. Mm. And you can see by the little calculation, there's a formula in the bylaw, and the formula says you take all the single-family housing units, that's single-family and condos, and then you take 2.5, and then you back out the number of total senior village
housing
units, and you multiply by 2.5%.
Right.
And right. So right now we're, and again we were tweaking these numbers today, so they might be a couple off one way or the other. But we're actually over our 2.5%. Big deal. We're over by about 10, but one of the units never got built on Chestnut Street. And we do have a proposal, at least in concept, for that 10 units to become 32 units. We met with a developer the other day that wants to put up 35 condos, 700 square feet, plus or minus, one-bedroom condos. And so put that aside because, okay, if he files, that's okay. I mean, it's not a bad, it's a good location. It's, you know, it's over 55, it's snowbirds, it's people.
Would it, it would continue to be for over 55.
Over 55, but here's the dilemma we face with this bylaw. First of all, other than Oak Hill, and even with Oak Hill, we were never able to get the open space or the vision of open space. So people would put a little narrow band around their development, which no one's going to ever use. You know, the vision 16 years ago is, oh, there'll be 10 acres set aside and there'll be public access, and Oak Hill, you know, Oak Hill actually put the old ski slope in the conservation land, but they never built the parking lot yet. And most people still aren't going to drive into someone else's neighborhood to go do that. So the open space part of it never really worked well. People followed the law, but it really didn't meet the intent of the bylaw. Yeah. Two, the affordability only counts if you do a study that's accepted by DHCD that says you meet certain criteria. So the affordability doesn't count as far as the state's concerned unless you go through the study process. Because originally they were going to say, you know, originally way back they counted them and they said, wait a minute, these are all old people.
over 50, you know, so they...
Easy on the snowbirds.
Yeah, right. So anyway...
Older, over 55 is not old.
No kidding.
You and I are alone there.
So... so we, the, you know, the open space network, the affordability is a challenge now as we okay. speak, and so we're wondering, do we change it? Do we eliminate it? You know, what should we do with this bylaw? That, you know, is there still a market for it? I don't know, but in its current form, it never worked.
Yeah.
In fact, one condominium built two buildings of condos, like 7 units or 8 units each, and then they went to the zoning board and got out of the restriction and built 3 more buildings. Okay, because it was a tough market, so they built 2 buildings that counted and 3 buildings that didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the point of the over 55 if they got out of it?
Right.
And here's the list, up top's the list of how many there are and about how many units there are. But, so I just wanted you to think about that. I mean, there's no rush to judgment, but.
Okay, so this is the Chestnut Senior Village, that's the one where they want to make more units there.
Well, that was never built. It was
right.
permitted, and now they've come back with 32 units, but condominiums. But he'd have to do 15% affordable, but he'd have to do a market study approved by DHCD before they could even apply. There was four two bedrooms. They're like 900 and something on the corners. So in the big scheme of things, and as we continue to build more units, obviously, we're going to be farther. Now, you can get a waiver from the planning board if we're over, but you have to prove the need. So this person would have to come and A, get a market study, and B, prove the need, which I don't know how you do, but I'm sure there must be somebody you can pay to prove there's a need, because we're all getting older. But certainly the open space portion, to my view, never
worked. Didn't work the way you wanted it to.
No, were supposed to get chunks of land.
Right.
And
right.
not a little ribbon around the whole development.
Like some place where they could put a bocce court. And
right. The concept of a village center
right.
was really community room. You can even have a certain amount of restaurant or retail space there. Nobody ever did anything with anything.
You don't see a gazebo. You don't see any common space. You don't see anything that, you know, gives you a sense of community and then some open space. We have open space subdivision. So, you know, again, you don't have to decide today, but I don't think it's any adding anything to us at this point. And we'll see how this guy makes out with the DHCD on the affordability. I wouldn't shut it off right before him, but I mean, you know, see what his, but at some point you go, what are we getting out of it? You know, we have apartments now going up. We have, you know, we have a lot of other things. And, you know, do you really want 100 more of these? I don't know. Because you can take advantage of the density.
Mm-hmm.
That's the issue. You get a really dense development out
right.
of this. and then you throw some swamp. Because it didn't say upland. It didn't say upland.
Like a gazebo in the swamp.
No, because
became the green space.
Yeah, right. Really, because it didn't say originally it had to be dry land.
Right.
So, and again, hindsight's 2020, and that was 17 or 18 years ago when we did it.
Yeah.
But
it was a good idea, but it didn't.
At least we got the cap on it down at 2.5%, which we did probably 10 or 12 years ago, but. It's just something to think about, whether it's a practical, and again, you can ask people and talk about it, but I just don't want another 50 of them coming in and taking advantage of a poorly written, in hindsight.
Right.
You know, the intent was great, but the reality didn't turn out that way.
Yep.
So that's what I wanted you to think about.
Okay.
We've got plenty to think about.
Homework.
I've got nothing to say.
No, glad.
I'm sorry, I ran out.
You ran up.
Ran up and talking.
I gotta buy you a coffee.
I've been talking all day, yeah. So.
Yeah. Okay. All right, then.
Do we have a next meeting?
Yes, we have a next meeting scheduled the 14th at 5:45 prior to our committee.
Council meeting? Okay. Mm-hmm. So we'll just probably just end up putting more, except for parking, most of these back on the agenda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can I propose a future event item?
Yeah.
Sure.
Just interested to see if maybe one of our upcoming meetings we can put some thought into maybe sort of channeling a little bit of sort of how the Industrial Development Committee in the late 80s sought out, you know, new businesses to come into town for some of our sort of underutilized commercial real estate currently, you know, whether it's Keegan Chevrolet right across the street, or I think there may even be a few spots over in the grocery industrial parks that are a little bit underutilized at this point. I've heard some stories about how the Industrial Development Committee sort of tried to reach out to commercial realtors and that kind of thing to build a tax base. And maybe that could be something we can have as a future agenda item to discuss.
So do you want our up-to-date efforts, not 35 years ago?
Yeah, obviously not 35 years ago.
Yes, what? Up-to-date, up-to-date.
You want what we're doing today?
Yeah.
Economic development.
Exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the Keegan's? That lot's being built out.
Okay, great.
No, but I think that's a good question.
Yeah. But just lots like that, can go you know, whether it be Clark Cutler or Dermot or that kind of thing.
I think I did when we did the master plan. It was only 60 PowerPoint slides. We can do that one or...
Yeah, let's
do
that
one. Or we can do the 5-minute presentation. You know, like. So it's up to you what you want. But there's a lot of things that we've talked about.
Great.
Nice.
Oh, we didn't talk about marijuana. When is marijuana on our list to talk about?
Well, I think that's going to be on probably the next meeting after this.
Yep.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Smoke them if you got them.
Non-debatable. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
That's what that means.
Yeah. Now I know.
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but I can't do it alone. I can always use your help. How can you help? If you like this, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like this, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.